Welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McLean.
I'm Isaac Hipple.
And this is Please Leave a Message. Season 5, Episode 2. Overall, this will be the 45th episode of our podcast. Hold up. Shows how much I know. This is the 46th episode. Okay, back to the show.
Overall, this will be the 45th episode of our podcast.
We are called Please Leave a Message because you can give us a call. And you can leave a message. The phone number to call is 440-SKETCH-2. That's 440-753-8242. You can find us at Message Podcast on Instagram. Anything that we talk about that's visual, we'll try to put up photos. And you can find our podcast at pleaseleavemessage.com, or you can go to iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn, all the other aggregators that are out there. So here we are. So what I've been up to, I went to They Might Be Giants concert this week.
Oh, sweet.
So awesome. I bought the tickets February 2020.
Seriously?
Seriously. It was for a concert that was supposed to be October.
COVID reschedule?
It was COVID reschedule, and then as soon as they started touring again, one of the lead singers was in a horrible car accident.
Oh.
And he was laid up in the hospital for quite a while, and then they postponed it again. So there were three postponements. So we finally went to the concert this week.
That's awesome. Where was it at?
It was at the Depot.
Okay.
In Salt Lake.
Yeah.
So really, really fun show.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's the fourth time I've seen them live. They're like my favorite band. The first time I saw them was at the Coliseum at the fairgrounds, which doesn't exist anymore.
The state fairgrounds here in Utah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. And I've run into like three or four people. They're like, oh, yeah, that was my first concert. And I'm like, oh, that was my first concert.
That's awesome. I'm so, such a slacker when it comes to concerts.
I don't go to a lot, but I went to that one, and when I was there, my friend told me that Ringo Starr is coming to town, and I'm like, I have never seen a Beatle in concert. I think I need to go to that
concert. That's a bucket list. That's something you definitely need to do.
Right? Yeah. So I checked tickets. I literally bought the very last one available.
Oh, that's cool. Where are they coming?
I can't remember. It's downtown somewhere in Salt Lake.
So my buddy just invited me. We're going to try to go to the Smashing Pumpkins concert August 1st, so they're coming to, I want to say, the USANA Amphitheater.
Okay, yeah.
That is
makes
that where
sense.
They're at? I think so, yeah.
In West Valley.
Yeah.
I used to live like 5 minutes from there.
That's like literally probably the first concert I'll go to in an actual concert environment. I've been to small venues and stuff, you know, Stadium of Fire, but like I said, I'm just a slacker when it comes to concerts. Like, I love music, but I've hardly been to any concerts. I feel so lame about that.
Well, I can understand that. So I'm looking forward to seeing Ringo. I hear he puts on a really good show.
What was the vibe at So They Might Be Giants?
How it's
packed?
So, it was a sold-out concert. It was just fun. It was just really fun.
Nostalgic?
Yeah.
Are they playing older stuff?
They played most. Okay, so this concert was supposed to be like an anniversary show for the Flood album.
Okay.
So they were going to perform Flood in its entirety. And when they announced that, they were like, now, we don't know how we're going to do it. We might do it in the order of the album. We might do it in reverse order. We might do it in alphabetical order. We might scatter it throughout the show.
Yeah.
We might do
what did they end up doing?
They just scattered it throughout the
show.
And it wasn't in any particular order. But the coolest thing that they did was, so there was this, they've been to that venue a few times. Mm-hmm. I've seen them there twice. And they said, so we've been to this venue before. We really like it. How many times have we been here? And they were trying to remember. You guys probably know better than us. How many times have we been here? And people were shouting out numbers, and John Flansburg points at this girl in the middle. He's like, you're front row center. You should probably
know. Yeah.
And she's like, this is my first concert that I've ever been to. So he hands her a copy of their newest album.
Oh, awesome.
Which,
did you get it?
Well, I've had it.
You've had it, yeah.
It's a book.
Holy.
And it's called Book.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And it's like this big art book.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
what's this circular thing?
It's just weird art that some guy did and poetry and.
But it has all the songs
and the lyrics and.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's totally appropriate.
Yeah. So they handed her that. But then they ended up talking to her like the rest of the concert.
Yeah.
They kept saying things like, this concert's for you.
And that's cool.
So at one point they're just making stuff up, right? And they're talking to her and telling her, so when you go to concerts and they're doing a thing where they're performing an album because it's an anniversary of that album, one of the things that they like to do is they perform one of the songs backwards.
Jeez. Did they actually do it?
They did.
That's awesome.
They performed Sapphire Bullets of Pure Love. And then, so it was, the concert was titled A Night with They Might Be Giants. So there was no opening act. It was
okay.
Just two sets.
Yeah.
They took a break in the middle. So they did that. Then they took their break. So 10, 15, 20 minutes later, however long it was, the lights go down, the screens come up, and they're playing the video in reverse.
Yeah.
And it was the song.
Oh, that's
like,
crazy.
When they were playing it, like, I couldn't even recognize it. I was like, this is odd.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what they say it is, but, and usually when somebody tells me something backwards, I can hear it in there, but I couldn't hear it in there at all. But then we're watching the video and they're like, they've got all the actions choreographed and they had done them backwards. So it made sense. And
was this live?
Yeah.
They're doing it backwards?
Yeah. That's they amazing. Performed it live backwards and then they played it, the video in reverse. And it was just the coolest
that
thing
is unique. Yeah, that's way cool.
It was so cool.
That
so,
chick got hooked up.
Yeah, they it was fun. And the other thing is that
mm-hmm.
that's on my wall there. So there were like these crown things that they were just handing them out free. I didn't know they were handing them out free. I just saw a lot of people with them. They get on stage and they joked about, because everyone's got these crowns that say they. And they're like, oh, we see we've got our woke army out there.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I saw them on the way out and they said free. So I just grabbed one to put on the wall.
That's cool.
So anyway, that was really fun. Other thing I did recently, there was free comic book day. You ever done that?
No.
So it's the first May of every Saturday.
Okay.
The first Saturday of every May.
That's a fantastic date.
I'd go like back.
To put that on my calendar.
Say that in reverse. Yeah, it's fun. So you go to freecomicbookday.com and look up the comic book shops that are participating.
Yeah.
And then you can just go in and they've got a bunch of comics there that you can just pick up for free.
Just pick up your own.
Yeah. So this was my stack because I went to three comic book shops.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I like to do it with the kids.
Yeah.
And so it's just fun.
And are your kids pretty into comic books?
They're not really into them, but they like free comic book day. My two youngest kids, they struggled with reading.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got graphic novels for them, and then they started to.
It's more interesting. They could follow along the story, and okay,
yeah, they really weren't readers until they started reading graphic novels.
That's cool.
So I'm a big fan of Free Comic Book Day. Just it's you know fun for the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You know I've read three or four of these so far, and sometimes I don't even get through all of them. But we go every year, and it's just fun.
That's cool. I have not read a comic book in a while. That's crazy. It'd be fun to...
So I hadn't either. I had not read a comic book for quite a while. But then the first episode that we did for this season was my two friends from high school that we used to collect comic books
and
make comic books together. And so we were talking about them a lot. And one of those friends has started a YouTube channel where he goes through comics and talks about them, you know, from an artist's perspective.
Okay.
And talks about, you know, why that one was one that was influential on him as a kid or why we thought it was cool in the 90s, mm-hmm. but now we see how crappy it was kind of stuff. So
it's like watching He-Man with my kids on Netflix now. You're like, wow, that was a really terrible, terrible artwork in that thing.
So after he was on the podcast and then we recorded some episodes for his YouTube channel mm-hmm. that same day. So we went through some comics together and talked about them. And since then, I've just been pulling old stuff out and reading it. And
what's your favorite?
And have it. Oh, I was a big Superman guy.
Okay.
I had a subscription to all four Superman titles.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Back in the day. So I was big in Superman. But yeah, I've been reading a lot of them lately. And I recently found out about artist editions.
So they're specific to the artists themselves that...
Look at this one.
This is Dwayne The Rock Johnson's comic book here. It's 50 pounds.
It's so huge.
Venom.
So what they do is they reproduce the original artwork.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so you can see the ink work. You can see where some of the some of the pages, you can see where the marker that he used is faded, and
yeah,
you can see where he's used white paint. And so this is kind of a new thing to me, and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. So I got a list of about 10 of these that I want to get.
So this isn't the final draft. This is kind of their,
this is what
almost ready to print kind of thing.
This is what they would have scanned, and then it would have gone to a colorist, mm-hmm. and the colorist would then color it, and then it would go to publishing.
Okay.
And so the lines aren't always like pure black, and they'll either adjust it in the computer after they've scanned it. But even this one, it goes back far enough that it was before they were doing computer colors.
Yeah. The artwork in this Spider-Man is amazing.
Yeah. Todd McFarlane is just the best.
Yeah.
And I got a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ones of that too. And that one's cool because it has three stages of the artwork in it.
Okay.
So it's got the original just layout sketches. Then it has the inked lines. And then because those were black and white comics, they did duotones, which was just, it's kind of shading, but it comes in these sheets and you just rub it onto.
Okay.
And it's patterns that can be reproduced in black and white.
Gotcha.
And so it has those three stages of it in that book.
There's something I can relate to.
It's just really cool to see that as an artist because you can see kind of the raw art that hasn't been modified by the computer or whatnot.
Yeah, it's neat. The amount of work and time, I'm sure, that goes into the detail that they have to come up with and be happy with it enough to say, okay, I'm ready for you to take it.
Well, and it's an interesting, like the 90s was just such an interesting time in comics because there was independent publishers coming out, and mm-hmm. Image Comics was breaking away from Marvel and DC, and it was creator-owned rights, and all kinds of crazy stuff was going on, and they were going from kind of an older school style of artwork to this new flashier style of artwork, and instead of printing it on like just the crappiest paper, mm-hmm. they were using nicer papers and computer coloring techniques.
Is that because you think the crowd or the audience they were marketing to was the same crowd but now older and expecting more, or is that trying to hit a new group?
I think it's because the guys that were doing it had grown up with it and they wanted it to progress. They wanted to take it further. And the guys that left Marvel and DC to create Image Comics, like Todd McFarlane was one of them, he's like, you're making Marvel, you're making all this money off of my artwork.
Right, yeah.
And I'm getting no kickback from it at all. And they're like, no, it's the characters that are selling it. It's not just because it's your artwork. He's like, no, my artwork is definitely a big selling point. And you're selling t-shirts and lunchboxes and everything with my artwork on it. And I don't get any kind of kickback. And if they had just given those guys a kickback, they never would have gone off and created their own comic book company. And it would have been a completely different history if they'd just given them some kickback from that.
I didn't know that. That's actually quite crazy. I think of like movies and stuff, right? Like, I mean, actors will get a percentage cut,
mm-hmm.
but it's like Lucasfilms, for instance. They're ones making all the money, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, we'll give you this percentage, but $1 billion later.
Yeah. And like, I can see it both ways because I think about, you know, you're an artist for hire. You were hired to do this thing.
Piece rate.
You know, you signed the contract mm-hmm. that this is what you would do.
Valid.
Now, if you want to renegotiate that when that contract's up, I get that.
And especially when we need you, right? That's what they renegotiate.
That's what they tried to do. They tried to renegotiate. The studios didn't see them as that. They saw the artists as just a dime a dozen, that anybody could do the characters. And they were like, see you later. And they went off and created their own companies and... It was a very interesting time in comics. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is this. So I know you can't see out there, but this is a choose your own adventure graphic novel called Talent Show Troubles by Jess Smart Smiley. So Jess Smart Smiley started this podcast with me.
Oh, cool.
He was the one that said, hey, Richard, I want to do something with you. I think we should do a podcast together. And so we got started and then he couldn't commit the time to it. And I was like, oh, I'm having fun, so I'm going to keep doing it. But if you look on the very last page, the credits, if you see who did the colors on that.
Colored by Richard McLean.
That's me.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So you're the second part. So he drew
black and white. He drew it all. He gave me like a guide of what he wanted to be, what colors, and then said, go to it. And so I colored it. He probably tweaked it a little bit after I handed it back to him. But
that's cool.
There it is.
How does this book work?
So it's just like a choose your own adventure. You just start on page one, and then at some point it says, what do you want to do?
Awesome.
Go to this page for that. Go to that page for this. And
it's thick, too. I mean, obviously, it looks like you have a lot of options.
There are
what is this, 230 some odd pages. So that'd be fun.
Yeah, it's really good. And so that's just the first in a series.
First book in a series, okay.
Yeah. So I colored more than one of them for him. So.
Audience, kids, adults?
Yeah, it's kids. Very kid-centered, but and it's just like goofy, mm-hmm. goofy. Like the world that the girl, her name is Megan, that is the character that you mm-hmm. follow throughout it. And it's just kind of a goofy, weird world that she lives in.
That's awesome.
With seagulls that chase her and a mean older brother. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just...
That's fun.
Elementary school hijinks. It's really fun.
Pick it up on Amazon?
Yeah. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at like Barnes & Noble.
Perfect.
I saw it at the local comic book shop a week after I called them and asked them if they had it. Because I was like, I'd like to support a local business.
Yeah, you bet.
So I called when I was going to get it, I called the comic book shop and they're like, no, we don't have that. And then I was there, you know, a week later for free comic book day and there was one sitting there on the...
That's kind of cool. They must have listened to someone, whether it was you or not. Yeah. But...
Well, they've carried other, because he's a local artist, so they've carried other of his books. That's why I thought they might have it.
Yeah.
So maybe they just hadn't gotten it yet. I don't know. So, but yeah, that's fun.
That is cool. How long did that take you to color this? I mean, what is kind of the timeline of a project like this?
It was tight. Like I was having to do like 5 pages a day to hit my deadline.
Oh, wow. And do you pick a palette that you go, okay, here are the colors I'm going to work with throughout this book?
So,
is that just as you go through? Or?
So Jess gave me like some sample pages mm-hmm. of what he liked. And then he had certain color schemes that he wanted to use for certain color characters. So he's like, this is Megan's normal color scheme. This is what it is if like she's in a dark room
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. So he had a few guidelines like that. But he really gave me a lot of leeway with it.
Yeah.
So I just based on those things, I colored the rest of it. And then he had me tweak a couple things. And I'm sure they, once it went to the editor, that I'm sure they adjusted some other things too. But it was a fun project. I hope that he's got more for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. That's way cool.
All right. So, Isaac.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Plenty of stuff. From Washington State. So I grew up in the Northwest. So in preparation for this, I downloaded some songs and thought of some songs, obviously, that are reminiscent of that time. So kind of the grunge scene is what I grew up in.
Okay.
And high school, played sports. So it was interesting. I played sports. I played soccer, football, wrestling. I was on the student body council. But I like to think of myself as a nerd, too, because I love sci-fi and fantasy fiction. We were talking a little bit early before we started. There are multiple series of books, Dragonlance Chronicles, Forgotten Realms, you name it, like that kind of stuff. I also loved Louis L'Amour, so I was also wanted to be a cowboy. Man, I love that stuff. Yeah, I left high school, went to college, was an ROTC, so again, a nerd. And luckily, I got picked up to go fly planes for the Air Force, so I went off, and for the last almost 20 years now, I've been flying multiple different airplanes for the Air Force and got out of active duty a couple years ago, about 8 years ago now. So I fly for Delta commercially. That's my day job, but... Mainly, I love going on adventures. I love going places, seeing new things, eating new things, and spending time with my family. So if they can come with me or my friends can come with me, that's what I really enjoy. So they can kind of experience some of the world travels I got the benefit of being in the military and my other job all over the world. And it's fun to keep seeing those things. And so in a nutshell, family of six for us. I came from a family of eight. So I had three brothers, two sisters, big family. Mom was very musical. She plays multiple instruments, sings, directs. Her latest thing that she did was they went on a mission down in Nauvoo, and she was director of all the musicals and stuff they did. So okay. I want to call it Sunset is one of them, but she absolutely loved that job. She was just in her element.
So my mom's family just loves traveling.
Yeah.
And so we did a lot of road trips mm-hmm. growing up, and one of the ones that we did more than once was we'd do a big family caravan, like five vehicles hitting the KOA and campgrounds.
Yep. Car camping.
All across the country. And we'd go back and we'd see the Nauvoo pageant. And then we'd go up and see the Kimora pageant.
Okay.
The funny thing is, like, we tried to see the Nauvoo pageant like twice and it didn't work out. Like, the one time we got back there, it was one of the huge floods. Like, one of the biggest floods that they ever had back there. We were in Hannibal, Missouri. Seeing all the stuff about Mark Twain and Tom Sawyer and Becky Thatcher and all that stuff.
That's cool, yeah.
And we were looking at those sites and we were like, well, we just heard on the radio that there's only one bridge open over the Mississippi.
Because of the floods.
Oh,
wow.
and they're going to close it. So if we want to get to the rest of our trip, we got to pack up now, and we got to get across that bridge before they close it.
This is crazy. Everybody in, let's go.
So we packed it up, and we took off. We made it across the bridge, and we were able to hit our other stops. And then by the time we got back, we could get back over.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was – and I've got so many memories of those trips.
That to me, that's growing up, same thing. Car camping. My dad, we had a brown Chevy Duravan, I think it was. We called it Martha. And at least my mom called it Martha, you know. And it's like brown van, blue, you know, three seat bench seats. Mm-hmm. My dad worked for Boeing as a carpenter, so he made a bed in the back, you know. And no one wore seatbelts back then. Right. We just sit on the bed, sleeping bags and pillows. We read books, play games. My mom, you know, ABC games, singing songs, you name it.
Yep.
She's just keeping us from fighting.
Well, Grandpa had one of those campers that sits in the back of a pickup truck.
Yep, yeah.
We had one of those. And then we had there was at least five vehicles.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we'd switch which car we were in,
yeah,
to spend time with different cousins, mm-hmm, or we'd ride up in the top of that looking forward out.
That's awesome. Yeah, who cares about it? So illegal now.
Right.
We didn't care. Whatever.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
But it was such good times.
That's cool. Yeah, those are definitely good memories, man. That's the fun stuff. I always try to get our kids to go do stuff, and anytime we can get somewhere, it's our busy schedules. I'm happy with just tent camping. My girls, they tend to like glamping, but it's all good.
Well, now that I'm getting older, I'm appreciating the glamping more.
Yeah.
I don't like getting off the ground.
I like showers. It's fine.
Yeah. But yeah, it's such good memories. And when we went to Nauvoo, though, it was the City of Joseph was the mm-hmm name of the pageant when we were going there.
Oh, cool.
So they weren't doing it because of the flood year. I think there was another time we went that we weren't able to make that pageant.
Yeah.
But we did make the Cumorah pageant. I was little, so I kept falling asleep during the pageants anyway. But we bought the tape of the pageant.
Okay.
And so we knew that tape because we just listened to it over and over and over again.
I need to ask my mom about that. I've never actually seen it or heard it. My mom and dad rehearsed some lines in front of me. We went down. I was on a layover in St. Louis, so I got a rental car and drove up one time. And then we brought the family down a couple months later. I was like, we all need to go here real quick. And so they did some lines because they were in the pageants, mm-hmm, too. So they would act and stuff like that. And
well, my grandpa, he served his mission in the New York area.
Okay.
And so he was in the pageant
there
on his mission.
Yeah.
And so that was part of what led to us doing
that. Oh, sure.
It was just wanting to go back and see the old stomping grounds.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, we knew those. And there's different recordings of that particular one because I found the one that we listened to over and over growing up. And the tape is so old that it's got bleed through.
Oh, wow.
Because the tape's just been spooled up for so long.
Yeah.
The magnetic has just faded through to
interesting
other, to
okay
layers.
I didn't know that either.
So there's actually when I listen to that tape, it's hard to listen to now.
Yeah.
Because there are three layers
of different songs.
Well, there's three layers of pre-echo and then I think two layers of post-echo.
Oh, crazy.
So you hear it three times and then it happens for real and then it kind of is still there a couple more times.
Is there a way to fix that? Is there a way to clean that up? Or is it just, that's what it is?
I tried, and I've got every kind of cleanup software there is on the sun for audio, and I could not find a good way to do it. I found a happy kind of medium, mm-hmm, where it was tolerable.
Yeah.
And I made a digitized recording and shared it with the rest of the family because everybody else's tapes were like that too.
Same thing.
But my first instinct was because there is a CD of it out there.
Okay.
I'll just buy the CD. And then so I bought it and I listened to it and I'm like, this is not the same recording. Nah. And it's missing stuff that's on the tape.
I need what I heard when I was there.
Right. Yeah. So that's fun. I also found there's a record version that's even older than the one that we grew up with.
And records should be clean and clear, right?
It sounds great, but again, it's not the same recording.
Not same.
And it's missing. The tape was the longest one. They put the most on the tape.
Yeah.
Like the record and the CD both are shorter. A lot of the stuff's missing.
Ah, that's too bad.
But I do have a tolerable. You can listen to it now. You can still kind of hear it in there if you turn the volume up too loud. But if you get it at the right place, you can listen to it.
That's cool.
So that's fun. So we like to do a found audio section of the podcast. And I forgot to ask you beforehand, did you have something to share for that?
So I served my mission in Moscow. So I may or may not have heard plenty of Russian songs and things. Most of the time it was a kiosk and it was like a group called Blastyashia, which I'm not going to play. It's like Russian Spice Girls. It was terrible. But every like old 60-year-old taxi driver was playing it in their car anytime we were in it. It was terrible. But we all learned the songs the whole time we were there. So this is called Lubei. Grupo Lubei is the name of the artist. I think on Apple Music, they go by Lubei, which really is spelled lube. So
okay.
I guess be careful what you're looking for on Apple Music. But so to me, and I could be wrong, this is just my opinion, but Grupo Lubei was, I think, kind of one of the original rock bands in Moscow. So okay. After the fall, these guys were kind of, I would say, nationalist, kind of, you know, heart and soul of Russia, but they were doing it through rock and roll. They got a bunch of songs, and if I can find the right one here, it's called Cone. And the story behind it basically is he's kind of talking about riding across the golden wheat fields and stuff of the expanse of Russia and the Russian Empire back in the good old days, the golden era, whatever you want to call it, of Russia. It's just kind of cool. It's nostalgic. It's kind of like a ballad. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And we actually sung it for a, what do you call it, a talent show in a town called Smolensk, which is called the key city of Russia. And it's kind of where all the invading armies came through. Anyways, pretty cool. They belt some sweet notes and stuff like that. And I could translate it for you, but it sounds cool.
Выйду ночью в поле с конем. Ночкой темной тихо пойдем. Мы пойдем с конем по полю вдвоем. 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 Ночью в поле звезд благодать. В поле никого не видать. Только мы с конем по полю идем. 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 Сяду я верхом на коня.
Мы идем с конем по полю. волю вдвоем.
Cool.
What'd you think?
I liked it.
It's like a... I love the harmonies. I love the powerful. It reminds me of like Hunt for Red October when they're singing on the submarine, you know. Yeah. And the scent, the essence of the song is his love for Russia and his ties to the land and the motherland, if you will, the Rodina. So it's kind of cool. And when I was living there, obviously it was fun to listen to, and we performed it a couple times. And it was one of those things that for me, my mom again was musical, so I grew up in a musical home, piano lessons, things like that. I played the saxophone and band, but it was always mediocre. You know what I mean? I still am. I'm not going to say I got any better, but I appreciated it more. And, sure. And on this, when I was on my mission and living there, we did a lot more singing and stuff like that. And they were small groups, so the talent was typically the missionaries. So you kind of had to almost learn again how to sing, play the piano, things like that. And so these kind of songs, I also got exposed to things like this where it just... And for me, I love Russia. At least I love my mission. I love the people there. And I've gone back a couple times. The Air Force sent me back a couple times for some language immersion. And it's just a beautiful country. History, the culture, the art. You would love the art. They have some amazing, amazing artists, which I think most artists probably could recognize and name several of them. Writers, poetry, you name it. And then just unlimited potential in a lot of their people, which... Politics aside, a lot of it's going unused, unfortunately, but still, just a wonderful place, and this always makes me nostalgic for it.
That's cool. I really like that. And so I brought something that I came across.
Okay.
I think it's kind of related, actually.
Okay.
So I found out about this thing called The Most Mysterious Song on the Internet.
Okay. Is it a Jack Black song? It's the greatest song
in
the world.
No, it's not like that at all. All right, so we'll listen to it first, and then we'll go over the story of where.
Cool.
So first of all, what do you think?
That was like, it totally is very similar. It reminds me of some of the kind of the earlier rock ballads and songs that Russians came out with. I couldn't pick up any of the language, though. I couldn't tell what they were singing. Like, I was just like...
You're like, is that English?
Right, yeah.
Is that German?
German, yes.
Is that Russian?
Someone with a really terrible accent trying to sing an English song.
Okay.
It's called The Most Mysterious
Song. That's what they're called. That's what they call it. Okay. But the reason it's called that is nobody knows who the band is.
No one knows what they're saying.
No one knows what they're saying. No one knows the name of the song.
That's awesome. And it's just out there. It totally sounds like some Russian... Early Russian band in the 90s or something like that trying to...
So this is from 85.
85,
84, wow. 85.
Maybe that's why they were hiding from the KGB.
I'm going to pull up an article about it just so I'm not getting information wrong.
That's crazy. We do not want this crazy Western influence.
Okay. So some call it Not Like the Wind. Some call it Blind the Wind. Some call it Check It In, Check It Out. Some call it Take It In, Take It Out. So the 80s,
yeah.
There's some guy in Germany.
Okay.
He's recording off of like a public radio type radio station, and he's just, you know, he's got his tape player and he's recording songs off the radio.
Yeah.
And like we all did.
Yeah, sure.
We'd cut out the DJ.
Yep. And just play the song and get our mixtape
and just get the songs and we'd make tapes out of it. And so he did this all the time, and as he was going down naming the songs after the night's activities, he didn't know this one.
Interesting.
He didn't know what it was called. He didn't remember it being...
Who it was. DJ didn't announce it, or he forgot.
That's the thing. The tape was found years later by the guy as he was going through his stuff, and he still didn't know the name of it. Huh. And so his sister took it and like put it on the internet and like read it, has tried to find out who it was.
Still no answer?
No answer. Nobody's been able to figure it out.
Is there a CSI for music?
So the original version that was found wasn't complete.
Okay.
And so that version that we just found was, after people searching and searching, somebody found that on a tape.
Uh-huh.
Same thing. It was just a mixtape. They found the full version, but we still don't know.
There's subliminal messages in it and stuff like that.
It's just like this.
Buy more things at Costco.
They kind of know it was probably 83 or 84, and they've been looking for, trying to figure out who it is since 2019.
That's interesting. We don't know who sang this song.
So... I was trying to say.
Because they're in a Russian gulag.
Well, they're thinking it's from behind the Iron Curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were probably trying to sing something either in English or something else. And
right.
Accent was terrible.
Yeah. And so they just think it was just... So it's the most mysterious song on the internet.
I got some friends. I need to send that to some friends. Hey, you guys recognize this?
Yeah. So yeah, if you just search on YouTube, the most mysterious song on the internet, it'll come up.
I got a buddy, Yuri. I'm going to send it to him. Hey, man, you heard this back in the 80s when we were growing up kids? Were you dancing around to this? A secret radio station in Russia? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Most mysterious song.
So that's my found audio for the week.
That's cool. That's way cool.
So we do a section of the podcast. It's called I Tick. We ask people the same six questions to find out what makes them tick.
Ah, gotcha.
So the one that we're going to play for this podcast is one that I found. So this is also found audio.
Okay.
So I took two-year break from doing the podcast because I was too busy with grad school.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, I did not have time to do it.
It's surprising you didn't have enough time. Huh? It's interesting.
Yeah. So I recorded the first episode getting back into this, and so I'm like pulling up the files and trying to create new graphics for the new season.
Yeah.
Trying to find my old files so they're kind of related but colored different and kind of stuff. And I'm going through the list of podcasts recorded, and I have an episode that I recorded and never edited and never released. So that's my found audio. So this interview that we're going to play is Nui Silva, who he did an episode with me, and we recorded this part for it, and then it was supposed to be on the next one, and then I never got it out.
Okay.
So,
lost recordings, if you please leave a message.
Exactly. We'll be right back. Okay, we call this part of the podcast I Tick. We ask everyone the same six questions to find out what makes them tick.
I have a strange tick.
All right, good. Tell us your name and what you do.
My real name?
It's preferred, but not necessary.
My real name is Ernest Silva.
Okay.
I don't go by that.
Okay.
It's my dad's name.
Ah.
He's Mr. Silva.
Gotcha.
I go by Nui. It's my middle name.
Okay. What do you do?
What don't I do? Art-wise, I do sculpture.
Okay.
Mostly.
Tell us your earliest memory.
My earliest memory? Hitting my brother in the face with a stick. My mom told me to weed the strawberry patch. And so I found this big old stick because I didn't want to pull out the weeds. And I was just lopping off the tops. And my little brother comes wandering out and he's like, no, I got an earlier one. He comes out and he's like, what you doing? I'm like, stay away. I'm going to hit you. Okay. He just keeps getting closer and closer and closer. And I was really getting into it. And I wound back and I popped him right in the face. And there was like a old branch nub that probably went an eighth to quarter inch into his cheek.
Ouch.
And it just spurted blood and I got sick and then I took him inside. And he has a scar to this day.
Oh, wow.
He's probably 2, so that means I was probably 8.
Okay.
I don't remember things. I have a horrible memory.
Tell us a story from your childhood that's influenced your life, maybe something you haven't shared often.
I found this the other day. So I'm doing a sculpture series on childhood trauma.
Okay.
And kind of how to overcome it. And this isn't traumatic. My story isn't. But I was practicing some of the things they're saying, trying to figure out what's going on in my life. And I was listening to Lindsey Stirling and her song, Gabby's Song. Okay. I just started crying out of the middle of nowhere. Just like tears were running down my face. I'm like, what is going on? Like I was sculpting. I had my Adderall. I had my Mountain Dew. I had my vanilla candles. I was set. And I'm just bawling. And I figured out as I dug and followed the traced it back. It was the Velveteen Rabbit.
Oh.
And I felt really bad that that rabbit had been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I still collect discarded things.
Okay.
And I put them in my office. I have the strangest things from like the early 1900s just hanging around. And that's because I can't bear to see anything discarded.
Wow. Share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
Tool.
Okay.
Anything Tool.
They're very cool. Like the way that they don't overcompress their music, and that's impressive to musicians and recording artists.
And I like any music that has a certain amount of talent to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there has to be a threshold of talent. I have to see you live and you have to play acoustic and then I'll like you.
Okay.
But my parents never listened to music growing up at all. Like my dad was way into it, but my mom was never into it. And so I didn't get music until I was in high school. My first album was Ace of Base.
Oh,
but I don't often admit that, but, probably the one that really pulled me out is, Joe Satriani, specifically his song Home.
Okay.
That's the one that really got me into guitar and kind of the rock world.
Okay.
More progressive. And it came to, you know, Metallica, Tool, stuff like that.
Very good. Share with us a piece of media, and this can be anything, been highly influential in your life.
Anything by Alphonse Mucha?
Not familiar.
He's the guy that did most of Art Nouveau. If you think Art Nouveau,
okay,
it's typically Mucha.
Okay.
I was in artist's funk for years, and then I took an art history class. And anytime I get stuck, I go back to art history. I research an artist, why they did the things they did, how they did the things they did. And Mucha is one of probably the most influential artists in my life.
Excellent. Tell us about your passion and why you do it.
I think it's storytelling. Like we were talking about earlier, people like artwork, but it has to have the artist behind it, the artist's soul. And so I like giving people a glimpse of the things I see. I don't think we all understand or see the same thing. The things the same way. Mm-hmm. There's always something in our upbringing or our past, how we were raised, things we saw, traumatic experiences that flavor everything we see. So I like letting people take a glimpse into my world and what I see is beautiful, or I like to call it the truth.
Nui, what makes you tick?
Playing with things. I think early on, the thing that made me tick the most is when people told me I couldn't do something.
Oh, okay.
And I said, yeah, I can. Watch. Now it's more combining two separate ideas into something that shouldn't be, but is. That's probably what makes me tick the most.
Excellent. So if people want to check out your work, hire you, get in contact with you, whatever, how can they do that?
I only have Instagram. I have a Facebook somewhere, but I don't think you really care about my political views, so I'd stay off there if I were you. SigBin2000 is my Instagram name. It's SigBin2000.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on and answering our questions. Mm-hmm. It's good to get to know what makes you tick.
Yeah, this is neat, man. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, for me, I have some other podcasts that I follow. Primarily, I just love to hear the new ideas, right? Or one of them that I follow, he always has guests on, mm-hmm. and they're experts in their field. And he's curious about what their perspective is, and I am too. So it's like, same thing. Like, you're like, I just want to sit here and listen. What does this person have to say, right? Here's their credentials. Here's what they do. Now let's let them talk. I'm like, oh, wow, that's really neat. I didn't know that, you know, like. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of cool. Love that kind of stuff.
All right. So we are called Please Leave a Message, and people actually left us a message.
Oh, sweet.
So this doesn't always happen.
Is this a phone number so I can call this on my phone?
Yep.
Hi, this is Brant, longtime listener, also contributor. anyway, I was just calling. My wife and I were looking to move to Brazil, and I'm just kind of putting it out there. And I know this is completely random, but if anybody knows of any remote jobs that I could work so that I can get a digital nomad visa for Brazil, that would be great. I don't make enough off my mini comics. I usually just give those away or trade them for other people's comics. So that's not a way to support myself. But if anybody has any ideas of places to look for a remote job, that would be fantastic. Or any job that would take me to Brazil to help us to support ourselves. Thanks. Hope it's a great podcast. It will be. It always is.
I love that kind of support.
So
expectations have been set high.
Brant is looking for a job in Brazil, or a remote job, and he can work in Brazil. So if you
is
know
he
of anything.
An artist? Is he an illustrator? Is he?
He's an artist. I know him just from local comic scene, and I think he moved to, I think he's living in Canada now.
Interesting. Actually. Okay.
So.
The French side or the other side?
I really don't know.
That's interesting. I had a buddy actually went to Brazil for the Air Force, did a like a professional military education there. Made me think about that, like as an illustrator. Nice thing about that is, I mean, this is me. I don't have a broad grasp of everything, but I would think like, you know, thought about my background, State Department. You know what I mean? Like, there's always a need for people, I'm sure, in a marketing or illustration or putting out their current campaign in that country. You know, there's got to be businesses and stuff like that. They're like just dying for someone that can.
I do art, but I'm not doing it full time mm-hmm. right now. You know, I'd like to do that at some yeah. point, but I like the job that I've got. It's nice and secure and not real high stress. And
yeah, I got a friend that, man, I have to ask him if that's his primary job. He works for Walmart and he's in that era. I mean, this goes back to my mission. He's one of my mission campaigns, my trainer. And, His letters to the president. You remember that mission president? You would set like a, it's like a yellow piece of paper mm-hmm. and you'd write like your review of the week, what you guys did, blah, blah, blah. He would write it as a comic strip.
I would do that sometimes.
Yeah. So he drew me. I remember I was like, that's not me. He's like, no, that's you looking in the mirror. I'm like, that is me. I was like, he picked out the characteristics that were definitely me. But that's where he works. He works at Walmart, you know, and like, just built him way up. He used to do like a general conference kind of thing where he would like do comics and freehand drawing of the speakers and what their points were. Kind of neat. I think he actually worked for the church at one point too, doing similar things, illustrations and whatnot. Man, Brazil, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Like I've done, like there's services out there like Fiverr mm-hmm. is one where people can sign up and they're looking for people to do different stuff. There's a lot of illustrators and programmers and stuff on there. So maybe that's something you can look into.
Is it Brant or Brants?
It's Brants.
Brants.
With a Z on the
with
end.
With a Z. Does Brant speak Portuguese?
He might.
Torobain?
Might have served his mission there. I'm not sure.
That would be helpful, obviously.
Yeah. I haven't seen him for a while.
That's interesting, but that's cool. I mean, you think about that, what a vibrant culture and things they have down there. They have a lot of potential as a country. It'd be interesting to see what is available down, what's going on.
Right.
I know there's a lot more development going on behind the scenes, at least government-wise, incentives for businesses and stuff moving into Latin America and stuff like that. Most Americans probably aren't even aware, but huge potential, young population, you know, ability to work and things like that. So it might be a good time to do it.
I was listening to like some carnival music.
Uh-huh.
And there's that like weird woo, woo, woo sound that's always like,
yeah.
And I was like, what the heck is that? And so I was like trying to look it up and found it. It's like this drum that's got a hole in the head.
Uh-huh.
And then there's like a stick through the hole and you get the stick wet.
Oh, interesting.
And then you rub it back and forth and it makes it do that vibrate-y thing. And I'm like, oh, wow. I've heard that so many times and I got really curious this one day to find out what the heck that noise was.
Is it an instrument that's used in normal culture there? Or is it just carnival?
It's on all the carnival music I've ever heard, but
you know what it's called? What's the instrument called?
I can't even remember the name of it.
We'll call it the Brazilian drum.
But I did have a friend on who has a weird instrument collection. He had one.
Okay.
So he
had it.
He played it on the podcast.
That's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you were wondering, this is the sound it makes.
So, all right, we got two messages, so let's listen to the other one.
Hey, so I was just thinking about leaving a question for your co-host, your guest that you're having on. You mentioned that he is a pilot for like commercial and military, having done both. So I've always wanted to ask somebody who's flown real planes for military or commercial, you know, civilian purposes, because we're a bunch of nerds. It'd be interesting to get his perspective on what movies, for example, have portrayed the worst, most inaccurate examples of aircraft, either both military and commercial, that are just so ridiculous. Him as a pilot just watches it and just shaking his head and just thinking it's ridiculous. And by the same token, are there any out there that got it really, really correct? Something that's like, wow, they paid attention to how this stuff actually works, and that's actually reasonably accurate. So I'd be curious to hear a real pilot's actual opinions on something like that. So that's all I've got, and thanks for taking the time to listen to my question, guys. Thanks. Bye.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, let's talk about this. So I guess I'll a little bit more of my background as a pilot. So just to give me some credibility, maybe, I mean, I'm sure all my pilot friends are just laughing, but so my first assignment as an Air Force pilot was as an instructor pilot, teaching primary pilot training down in Texas, down Del Rio, Texas, Laughlin Air Force Base. And it was in a T-6 Texan. It's a relatively newer plane built in the late 90s it was bought from Pilatus. So if you're familiar, I think it's a Swiss company called a PC-9, and they turned it into the T-6 Texan II, 1,100 horsepower, tandem seated, lots of fun. And so I did that for 3 years. Then I went and flew the F-16 and flew that out of Hill Air Force Base and out in Korea. And then I flew an MC-12, which is a King Air 350, flew that out in Afghanistan primarily as a reconnaissance aircraft. And then I was an instructor again in the T-38, which is also a fighter trainer. It looks very similar to the black plane in the original Top Gun, the MiG-28. No one's ever seen one of those before. And then my last job here, I'm an instructor in the KC-135. It's a Boeing 707, so it's got four engines. Yeah, that's the one we pass gas. So again, I got several thousand hours flying military aircraft and several thousand hours or more now flying for Delta. So to answer the question, and I'm really excited that he said we're all nerds, because I am. Like I said, I've always thought of myself as just a nerd. But so immediately what came to mind was Iron Eagle, okay? And it progressively got worse each subsequent show. Just absolutely terrible. For a couple of reasons. Just, I don't care who you are. You're just not going to go do what he does. But my favorite scene is actually in the very beginning of Iron Eagle, where they get out of, like, they were flying, like, whatever. I don't remember what it was. They were flying BFM dogfighting or something like that. And his dad takes him up in the F-16, right? He's got his son snuck into the backseat of the F-16 as he's doing this mission with his you know, fighter crew, which would never happen. There's no way you're sneaking someone onto that flight line who's not supposed to be there. But his dad's a lieutenant colonel, I think, or a major. I think he's a major. And his wingman, right? So, one, he's not the flight lead. He's also a junior officer. Calls him out for, what was that? I thought I heard some, you know, rock music or something like that over the radios. And Anyways, just like, again, totally hilarious, would never happen. The other movie I think is terrible is, actually, it's a good movie because Jessica Biel's in it, but Stealth. It's absolutely terrible.
I just watched that the other day.
He goes like, I don't know, like the speed of heat, 12 million miles an hour straight down and pulls like 18 million Gs and drops a bomb straight through a building. You're just like, oh my gosh, that's so stupid. Luckily, Jessica Biel's in it. So you just kind of keep fighting your way through the movie. Just a terrible movie. Total BS. So Top Gun and Top Gun 2, Top Gun Maverick. The first one, again, for me, was one of the reasons I wanted to be a pilot, right? I didn't know any better. And to be honest, watching it again, like, yeah, you know, there's some stuff in there. You're just like, okay, whatever, you know. Because a lot of it was shot from the ground, if you will. They used what was a gun turret, if I remember right. And they used a lot of, so they flew low, even though it looks like they're high up and they're dogfighting high up. They're actually down low because that's where the cameras were mounted so they get that vision. But, and Tom Cruise did fly in some of the back seats of those F-14s. And so there is some live shots of them flying in planes and stuff like that. Obviously, the middle finger, and we're communicating international relations and whatnot. So some of that stuff was obviously exaggerated. Now, Top Gun Maverick was awesome. I know you guys went and saw it. I took my whole family and saw it, even dressed up, no big deal. Like I said, nerded out, wore my flight suit, sunglasses. Kids wore my flight jackets and stuff like that because it was epic. And Tom Cruise described it as a love letter to aviation, and it totally was. He totally came through on his promise. The neat thing about that movie, one, the cinematography is amazing. When you think about how they had to do it, each of those actors was their own director and filmer, right? Like they were their own cameraman, if you will, because there's no one else. They're actually in the back seat of an F-18, and they used F-18s because there are no more double seat or tandem seated fighter aircraft. We've gone to single seat fighters, so F-22s, F-35s, even the Super Hornet. There's a couple, but primarily the F-18 was really the only one that is now they can actually film in, and the Navy was definitely on board, so that's always nice. But the cool thing is, again, they're back at Top Gun, you know, where they're the best of the best, right? And even when I was watching it, you're watching this movie and Tom Cruise is just clubbing baby seals. You know what I mean? To use that reference, just destroying all these, what are Top Gun graduates, right? These guys are supposed to be the best of the best. Is that real? And I'll tell you right now, yes, that's 100% accurate. If that was a real life scenario where they had to train and they had come back from the fleet or from wherever to get instruction and training a mission, and they're being trained not only by a Top Gun instructor, but a Top Gun, whatever, commander, you know, stuff like that. These guys have been in that school as instructors, and they have thousands of hours of seeing the same mistakes all the time. And so, yeah, so even though these guys are great, this guy's seen everything, right? So he is. He's clubbing baby SEALs. And all the filming and stuff, the cinematography, the low levels, granted, there is obviously some cinematography in there, but a lot of the stuff they're doing, I've done in the F-16. We've done low altitude ingresses, pop up, drop bombs, get back out behind the terrain. Their mountaintop, okay, yeah, that's awesome for Hollywood. But for the most part, a lot of that stuff was legit flying. It was pretty cool to watch.
Very cool. I'm trying to think if I've forgotten something. I feel like there is.
There's a surprise question in here.
There's something I'm missing.
My favorite color is green. Just kidding.
No, anyway, it's been really fun.
Yeah, dude, it was fun to come here. I was looking forward to it. It's kind of neat. I've never, like I said, never done something like this where...
Yeah, it's good.
That was cool that someone actually left a message. I'm like totally stoked that someone was like, hey, man, there's a pilot coming. Let me ask him a question. Oh, man, yeah. Pilots love to talk about themselves, so anytime, leave a message.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, we're called Please Leave a Message. Our number is 440-753-8242, and it's 440-SKETCH-2. Sketch, the number 2. If you just want to memorize that, and then you can use the alphabetical
nice
way to dial. Anyway, we're at Message Podcast on Instagram, and Please Leave Message.com, and then all the other podcast places. And it's just been really fun. And
same. Thanks for the invite. Appreciate it, Ben. Yeah. Great being here.
And we'll see you all next time.
See ya. I'll just do narration while you're walking around your room. Richard now proceeds to the left side of the room where he picks up a mysterious orange box. Inside the box is anyone's guess. It looks military, possibly a drone, most likely some kind of high-tech computer. That's funny. They were very secure, those questions. No one was going to get those.
Surprised I even remembered that that's where it was.
No one shall know these questions until the podcast.